Hi, and welcome to episode number 21 of the weekly Google Cloud Platform podcast. I am Francesc Campoy, and I'm here with my colleague Mark Mandel. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Francesc. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. A little bit tired after all these weeks of a lot of action, but yeah. Very excited about the interviews today.
Yeah, we're going to have some conversations that we recorded back at GCP Next a couple of weeks ago now, talking to the people from Instrument who did the demos at the event.
Yeah, so we interviewed three people from Instrument. We interviewed John Brown, which is the technical director, Violet Pena, which is that worked on Vision API for a very cool demo, the Emoto booth. And then Nick Taperas that worked on the Query-It, which is a demo using BigQuery.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome demos. I think it's going to be really interesting to hear like how they explored the APIs and used the products and what they learned and what worked and what didn't.
Yeah, those are all very beautiful demos. Like you can tell that they're pros at this, but also they're really interesting in the way they use our product. So I think it's going to be very interesting conversations.
Yep, most definitely.
And after that, we'll have a question of the week. And today it's about Deployment Manager.
Yeah, we're going to have a look at how you can use variables in Deployment Manager.
I think it's the first time we ever say the words Deployment Manager.
I think so.
Yeah, so excited about that too.
Definitely.
But first, let's go with a cool thing of the week. So we're going to be talking about Stat Driver error reporting. So what's new on that?
So as of a blog post that came out yesterday, we're pretty excited to announce that, yeah, if you need a service to basically aggregate and collate the errors that are happening within your application, and, you know, I guess there are probably some. I'm sure everyone else is in our audience's applications are completely perfect and never error out.
Mine are perfect.
I believe so. So while we've had log aggregation for a really long time, you generally also want some kind of service to be like, hey, all these errors happen together. They're all happening at the same time. Maybe only send you a notification when a new one pops up and handles those sort of things, like where is it coming from, all that sort of stuff. It's a lot easier to sort of parse than be like, you know, let's go through all the logs looking for keywords, things like that. It's pretty cool. And right now it's in beta, so, you know, it comes for free, which is pretty sweet. If you're using App Engine, though, you get it for free. You don't have to install any agents. You don't have to do anything special. It's just ready to go out of the box. If you're on Compute Engine, you just have to install a short agent, and there are some tools in there for sending errors through to it. But yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I'm pretty excited with how it works.
Yeah, the thing that I really like is whenever it actually finds new errors, and you can of course set this up to match your preferences, but it can actually send you emails.
Yep.
So you can basically be like on call and enjoy your life until the moment where you get the email saying, well, enjoying your life is done now. Go back to work. But yeah, no, I think it's a very useful feature that I hope people will use.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as sexy as some of the things that we've done in the past, not as shiny maybe, but it's sort of one of those glue pieces that holds everything together.
I could say it's almost as sexy and shiny as probably messaging.
Or like logging.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it works. When it works, nobody cares.
But when you need it, you really need it.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. So I think it's time to go talk with our friends from Instrument.
Yep.
We're going to have three interviews back to back.
Yep.
So enjoy them. We're going to have first John Brown, then Violet Pena, and finally Nick Taperas. And then we'll be back to talk about the question of the week.
Sounds like fun. We are joined today by somebody, I think, a little special to the conference.
Oh, thank you.
A little special. Gentleman by the name of John Brown, I believe you're the technical director?
Yes, I'm the technical director at Instrument from Portland, Oregon. And I oversaw the development of the playground experiences that all the attendees have been experiencing.
Cool. So the playground experiences, there's the Emoto booth.
The Emoto booth, right?
There's the 360 tour.
There's the 360 data center tour.
There's the BigQuery.
And there's the Query-It. The BigQuery trivia game.
So okay. Let's talk a little bit about them. Why don't we start with the Emoto booth?
The Emoto booth is awesome.
Tell us, what is this exactly, and how did you make it?
Sure. So the Emoto booth it's deceptive. You think it's just going to be a photo booth. You walk up, but all of a sudden, the person who's taking your photo isn't just saying smile. They're saying frown, show me some surprise. Actually, show me some anger. What do you got? You got some anger?
Yeah.
And you get through joy, sorrow, emotion, joy, sorrow, anger and surprise.
Isn't that the seven stages of grief or something?
Those are the seven sins, the four sins. And then after you get your photos taken, you walk around the corner, and instead of just seeing a regular photo, you get to see a close-up of your face. It shows all the landmarks of where your eyebrows are, the corners of your eyes, your mouth, and then it shows you the sentiment. It gets sent through the Google Vision, the Cloud Vision API, mm-hmm. The face detection portion, and it'll show the likelihood of all of the four different sentiments that it already had you go through. So you get to see a cool aura surround your face. So if you had very likely joy, you get to see a really fun yellow halo burst around you. Or if it's if you really could nail that frown when they asked you to frown, you can see a fun blue shade that goes up.
I particularly am enamored with this. We may have possibly changed the title image on our Twitter account for GCP Podcast.
Oh, amazing.
To both of us being surprised.
You guys did a group shot.
We did, the two of us.
Yeah,
It's fantastic.
Let me show you right now, but this is our nude.
Yeah, that's photo. A good one, yeah.
So you can find that if you go to twitter.com/GCP Podcast, you will see both of us being incredibly surprised.
One thing I love that you did as well is not only did you let people see it on the images around the corner, mm-hmm. but you also, when you tweet it out, you've got a gist there with like all the data from the Cloud Vision API, as well as all the images that you took in the photos as well.
Exactly. So you can explore the photo and all the data that's related to it. It's all in one place. You can sort of compare and contrast between the different pieces.
Yeah, very cool demo. I really liked it. The second one that a lot of people were very excited about is the 360 tour.
Yeah, so our company did the planning of the actual 360 portion of it. We didn't actually do the video. A Google team did the internal data center video for it, but we sort of integrated it with the rest of the playground experience so people could come in, look at it, get to see the behind the scenes of the server that Google's finally letting people see. In a really cool way. You get to see it in, I don't know, it's probably about 30 feet wide. You can actually feel like you're standing inside of the server.
It is pretty amazing. I have personally been in a data center, mm-hmm. and this is probably the closest you can get without working at Google.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed with the amount of stuff that we're actually showing inside
the data center. Yeah, it's really, really, really
neat. Yeah, very cool. One more question about the last demo that we have is the BigQuery that called Query it!
Exclamation point!
Yeah, I love the name.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to play with this, so tell me about what's the deal there.
Yeah, so essentially what we did is we wrote 200 questions, they're sort of trivia questions, things like what state mentions Velveeta cheese the most on Reddit, or what musician's Wikipedia page was visited most in 2015. And what we've done is we have a ton of public data sets for Reddit, Wikipedia, GDelt. And a couple others that we have written queries for that when you type in your answer, it actually puts it into the query, runs the query live. There's a really fun visualization that has a visualized model of what's happening behind the scenes in BigQuery. So it's not 100% accurate, but it's a really cool visual representation of what's happening.
It looks really cool,
yeah. Yeah, and then you get points based on the accuracy of your results. And there's two podiums. So you get to play a friend or a stranger. Ooh. There's a little bit of competition. Maybe you can talk smack to each other back and forth, but it's a lot of fun.
So you're like basically trying to guess what the big data computation is going to end up being.
Exactly, yeah.
I actually got to play twice.
How'd you do?
So the first time I won, but it was kind of cheating because the first question that I got was, I think it was from Stack Overflow, or maybe GitHub.
Mm-hmm. GitHub.
It was, what is the language where people mention more Google?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a developer advocate for Go.
Yep.
So that was kind of easy.
Right, yeah.
So I got 100% on that one. And even though I wanted to let the other person win, because on the last question was, what was the most popular kitchen utensil on Wikipedia last month?
Mm-hmm.
I went with spork.
How did you do?
Zero.
Oh,
0 points. Oh. That was the point. I wanted to lose, and I still won. And the second time, I got destroyed by Sarah Robinson from our team. She destroyed me at every single question. Yeah.
Good. That's good. That's fun.
But yeah, that was an awesome demo. Tell us a little bit about your experience using the cloud to build these demos. How was it?
Sure. So we got to use the one of the really interesting things is we got to use the Cloud Vision API when it was still in the alpha stage. So we got to see you know, what it was going to be, and we got to try all the different features early on. And as we were developing the Emoto booth, we got to try things like the object detection or the label detection. We got to try the OCR. We got to try the landmarks. We got to try all these different things, and we got to craft the experience that we ended up seeing based on being able to easily put all the images in, run through it, hit a bunch of that data, and sort of like look at it and figure out what we wanted to do with it. And we ended up going with the sentiment analysis, but we had things like we had giant cutouts of hot dogs, and we're like, can we detect the hot dog? Do we want to give people cowboy hats and put them into a scene and it's going to detect the cowboy hats? We tried a bunch of different things, but the CloudVision API was really great, even in the alpha stage. And then the only thing that it only got better as it went, we got to run more queries on it. We got to run more hits on the API, and it was a lot of fun to develop a physical experience around.
Excellent. Yeah. And you found it, I'm guessing, like a relatively easy API to use. Like it wasn't
Absolutely.
Difficult.
Yeah, we built a tool. We built a tool to just drag and drop images into a web browser in about half a day, and we were up and running, and we could see the output and
nice
zoom in on the faces where they were detected and get all the sentiment analysis.
Is that tool open source?
So all of the tools are going to be open source. Probably about mid-April, we rushed to get everything here.
Yeah,
got a little bit of technical debt we need to take care of.
I know that story.
I can
well.
Imagine. Yeah, we've been there.
But yeah, all the tools and the Emoto booth will be up. We're going to be hopefully going to I.O. So if anybody didn't get to come and experience either the Emoto booth or query it here at the next conference, we may be at the I.O. conference.
We'll be there
so
with you.
That'll be great.
That would be awesome.
That is great. So tell us a little bit about what you thought about the conference. I know you were really busy building the demos, but were you able to follow a little bit the keynote?
So there's so many people wanting to go through the Emoto booth. We didn't get to really see the keynote, but one thing that I will say about the conference that my team has gotten to experience firsthand is going through the Emoto booth. As I said, you're trying to get people to do joy, anger, sorrow, and surprise, but essentially everybody's going through and there's so much happiness and joy and people are smiling, having a good time, being around cool people and learning about what's next.
Yep.
That our historical screen is skewed with a ton of joy, even though we're like trying to get the emotions out of people for the other things. It's basically everybody's here having a great time, and I mean that's exactly what you want to see.
We have statistical representation of people having a good time.
Yes, we have data. We have data on that.
That is a good problem to have. That's a good skill to have. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
That is awesome. Well, thank you so much again, John, for taking the time to talk with us. We know you're very busy today.
Yeah, I'm gonna go back over there.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you too.
See you later.
Bye.
So we're now with Violet Peña, one of the developers from Instrument, the company that created all of these cool demos that are surrounding us. Hi, Violet. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Very excited to have you here. Yesterday, we got to interview John. John Brown. He told us a little bit about all the demos from a high point of view. What demos did you work on?
So I was focused just on the Emoto booth. Using the Vision API.
Cool, which was an amazing amazing demo. Yeah,
we love this demo.
Great.
Yeah, lots of fun. Tell us a little bit, how was the experience? How did you come up with the idea and how did it work?
Yeah, so we were looking for something to showcase the Google Cloud Vision API. We were looking for something that we could fit into the conference experience as like a really fun break from more technical sessions and those kind of experiences. So we're trying to figure out how to highlight its different capabilities or how to make that fun and interactive. And so we ended up landing on looking at facial recognition, which is one of the attributes of the Vision API. And so we started getting really great results with facial recognition and sentiment analysis. And so then we ended up with this photo booth that you walk in. We help you make different faces, conjure up different emotions. And then we analyze the points on your face and your different anatomical features. And then we tell you about what emotions you're displaying in that photo.
So was there a particular part of the demo that you specifically worked on?
So I was focused on the front end. So everything that you see in the displays, I had a large hand in. And then I have some coworkers who are more focused on the like back end and infrastructure sides of stuff. And so that's, you know, that was vital to actually kicking off all the analysis and experience after the photo is taken. So that was, you know, hooking up the camera to, you know, getting everything to run properly and getting all the back end processing to happen so that we can, you know, get your beautiful photos to you.
So you did a lot of the, like the animation and like the display up on the screen that you actually see as you walk around.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. That's awesome.
There was a lot of just cycling back and forth between me and the designers about like, oh, well, what if we, you know, tweak this color and that opacity and, you know, change those timings. And so it was really, really amazing.
It looks great. It looks
so
really,
much
really
fun
great
to work on.
There's a couple things that I really like. One of them is kind of subtle, but actually, so that aura that surrounds you surrounds only the faces that you can actually see.
Yeah.
And I saw the picture with you and three more people. I think you were in that picture. Maybe not. But there were four girls in the picture, and only one is looking forward. The others are looking backwards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it
kind
of does that highlight of that single person looking at the camera. How does that work?
So the way that we've had the experience work is that we want this, you know, we want this colorful visual treatment on the photo, but we didn't want to cover up people's faces. And so that's how we were also bringing in the hexagon motif into the whole thing, right? Draw a hexagon around the faces that you find. But then, of course, if it only finds a one face, it doesn't know if it's a person if it can't see your face. So that's how sometimes we ended up with, like you saw, if three people are turned around and one person's facing forward, that's the only face it finds. So it only draws the hexagon around there and it only analyzes the emotions from that one face. So we actually also had some group shots where one person wouldn't be ready. And so just totally by accident, they would be looking away or in our testing, someone was sneezing while the photo was taken. And so her head was down. And so it drew a hexagon around like the other people in the picture. And then she was like covered up by the color. Yeah. Yeah. So,
but no, I really like that as like, actually just a really cool idea for using Vision API for like being able to recognize, okay, these are the things that we want to like focus on. And so here are the faces. So we're going to draw around that and frame that because we know where they are in the picture.
Yeah. So something else really funny that happened with face detection though. And this wasn't a bug, kind of a bug, but it was just really, really funny to me. Some people here have security badges with photos of them on it.
Nice.
And so it didn't happen to all of them, but to maybe about half of them. I guess the light made it clear enough, like the flash was bright enough, the badge was angled forwards. So it would actually detect the face on their badge. And like, these are really little, right? Like
that is very cool.
A little photo. Yeah. And so most of the people, so it would map, like there's another face in the photo and then it would zoom in on that face and it was like this little blurry picture on a card. And so someone was actually smiling really big in her photo on her badge and it actually kept saying joy very likely for that badge.
So, cool.
So it was even sentiment detecting in that teeny badge photo. So I think it's hilarious
that
when
is
stuff
awesome
like that happens.
Very cool.
I really like it. Cool. John also mentioned that apparently there were hot dogs involved with this demo.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit more about what's going on?
Yeah. So you're not going to see any hot dogs in the product today. But that was part of the journey as we were figuring out what the experience should be. So kind of close to the beginning, we were like, well, a photo booth would be great because, you know, conferences have a photo booth, but like we're analyzing photos, so let's do something with that. So we were trying to figure out what the photo booth should do. And so since... So the Vision API has so many like options of things that you can try to analyze. And so one of the options is label detection. And it can tell you what a photo is of in general. So like you pass it a photo of a farm and it'll give you, you know, labels about what it would classify the photo as in confidence scores. And so we were trying to leverage that. And so we were thinking like, well, what if we gave people props and... then we could get labels going. So like if you're carrying around, if you have a hot dog, for instance, then maybe...
Which is something I often do. I just have a hot dog.
Yeah, just... Yeah. Oh, well, okay, so we were printing out foam core props. This was like a however many... 4 foot long hot dog or something.
That was no real hot dogs?
No actual. But because those would be a little bit small. But we were printing out like... you know, a huge hot dog, a boom box. We were trying to do landmarks. So we were like... Yep. We had a Sphinx...
Oh, cool.
This big, like, Eiffel Tower, cool. Stuff like that. So we were trying to do that. And maybe so if you have a hot dog or like a slice of pizza, maybe it'll change the background of the photo to like put you and your group in a restaurant or something like that. So we were playing around with that and it just got too hairy because it doesn't detect, as of right now anyway, it doesn't detect specific objects and say like, oh, I see a hot dog at, you know, this pixel by that pixel.
Oh, yeah.
It just tells you what the whole image in general is of.
Yeah.
So if you send it the whole image of people, even if they're holding a hot dog, it'll say, you know, top guess is, you know, group setting or photo shoot actually was a guess. It was giving us a lot. And we were like, oh, that's not very interesting. Come on. we were trying to like slice up the image and send through little parts, but it was taking... It was taking just a long time because we had to keep sending more small images and checking those results.
Sure
and so at some point we were just like, ooh, I don't know if this is going to work right now. But then we had such other amazing stuff to dig into that I think ended up being like really, really successful.
Now, so, this is a very cool demo. Is there any other ideas that you would like to share with like, oh, yeah, we thought about this other than the hot dogs and it did not work or something?
Right. Yeah. So, like I said, we also had landmarks. And so something that we were throwing around a little bit was so if you have landmarks, we wanted to almost make postcard treatments.
Oh, cool.
So like, if you're walking around with the Eiffel Tower. Right. And that's in your photo. Then like the visual treatment we do, like it puts you the city of Paris behind you. And then we have like a greetings from Paris across the front.
Nice. I like that.
We were doing that and we were trying to figure out like, okay, so if one person has, the Statue of Liberty and one person has, the Arc de Triomphe, like what happens then? Like, where are we putting them? In like in what country, in what city?
Yeah.
And so we were,
Vegas.
Like, we were like, maybe. Yeah.
Vegas.
That's actually, we never thought of that. That could have been our default for when you were like mixing really weird stuff.
It's Vegas.
Probably Vegas. So, that was really fun. And so that was another route that we, kind of started going down playing with that, or maybe like, oh, we layer backgrounds together or we combine city names, like welcome to New Paris or something that.
Yeah. So, that'd be really cool.
That would have been really fun. Maybe we'll do some other just like little fun side project.
That'd be
with
awesome.
That, but
let's see what you build for GCP next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about that.
This has been awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Bye.
So we're here again with, again, someone working for Instrument, this amazing company that created the very cool demos that surround us today at GCP Next. We have Nick Zaperas. Zaperas?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. that worked specifically on the Query It demo, right?
Yeah.
Hi, Nick. How are you doing?
Doing good.
Could you tell us a little bit about you, what you do at Instrument, and then how is it that someone came up with that, with this cool idea?
Yeah. Well, at Instrument, I'm a back-end developer and kind of all over the place. We have a lot of front-end talent at Instrument, a lot of graphic designers and front-end developers. So anything that's at all DevOps or writing SQL for BigQuery, that kind of back-end thing, I'd hop on that. And I think the idea for BigQuery came from our creative talent at Instrument, and we're trying to mimic the Family Feud style, like create a game for BigQuery. That's what the team that I work on, that's what we try to do, is create interactive experiences with technology.
Very cool. So you mentioned that you're a backend engineer. Have you ever written before SQL? Is that something that you put in your resume?
I've definitely run a lot of SQL. A few jobs ago, I was actually somewhat of a DBA, a small company. And so there's a lot of things that needed to be done, and was running backups for the database and running migrations and writing SQL to try to figure out why the database was running slow, trying to do performance optimizations on it. So pretty familiar with SQL going into the BigQuery.
Cool. Did you need to do any of those, like making sure the queries are optimized and stuff with BigQuery?
A little bit, yeah. We're trying to make an interactive game, and you know, any good interactive experience won't have you sitting there for a minute waiting for the query to finish. Yep. And so, we're trying to support a lot of features. So, some questions like, what was the most talked about rapper on our music in the last year? we wanted people to be able to type in Kanye or Kanye West or J-Z or J-Z and have it all work. And so the databases that we're using had aliases, and trying to pull in those, all the aliases for every single, you know, musician, and searching Reddit for that, was taking like a minute, you know, and the game's slow and chugging along. Cause you type in your answer and you're sitting there for a minute, just waiting and waiting.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of, the BigQuery interface actually had, some, like when you run your query, it has an explanation of where time was spent and shows you some kind of portions of your query that took a long time. And was able to use that to figure out what to kind of cut out of the query to make it run faster, to make it more of a faster paced trivia game.
Was this your first experience working with BigQuery?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Just yeah,
but pretty easy to pick up.
Oh
wasn't,
yeah,
like difficult in any way.
Yeah, I just jumped into the interface. I think almost the entire time I was just using the interface that was created.
Cool.
A coworker of mine, eventually we're trying to create as many questions as possible, because that's something else, is we want people to be able to stick around and play a few times and not see the same questions over and over. We're shooting for 200 questions.
Wow.
And
wow.
So eventually, once we got up to that many, we had just a huge database of questions. It became impractical to manage by hand. And so we're using the API more. But when I first started playing with BigQuery, it's just with the interface. And Felipe, he is actually using some of his databases. He just sent me some links to his databases, and they showed up on my account, and just started playing with them. Yeah. And
so I'm sorry. Go on.
And then, yeah, just clicking on tables, and you can see all the columns and the schema, and just writing SQL and looking around at the data.
Awesome. So I'm quite curious to know what the process was for coming up with those questions. Did like people pose, like,
yeah.
I know you had the data sets. Did they like pose the question to you, and then you were like, okay, now I have to answer this question using BigQuery, and then you'd go off and answer it,
right,
and just rinse and repeat, or it what
was,
happened?
Yeah, it was that was the most challenging thing, was coming up with the questions, because it's, the data sets themselves aren't that exciting, honestly. It's just Reddit comments and GitHub commit pushes, and it was trying to create a question that would make you laugh, but was also still possible to actually query, was pretty challenging, and the process evolved a lot. At first, it was, we had a writer that was just coming up with fun questions, and a strategist coming. They were both working on just writing questions, and then I would go and see which of the questions that they wrote were actually possible to search. And this is before I even really knew the data sets that well. And so I'd take the questions and have to actually go see it. Well, is this queryable? I'm not sure, and go try it out and realize, oh no, there's actually kind of a limited things that we can search. And so then we changed it up to where we've reversed it to where it's like, okay, I'm more familiar with the data sets. Here's what we can query. Try to make these interesting. I think the one that we had the most fun with was pulling tags from Freebase, which is kind of like it's in BigQuery, but it's more of like a graph database. It's just a bunch of connected. You can go from like Tom Cruise was an actor in this movie, and this movie was done in 1983, and then 1983 is the year that this happened. Like, it's just this big connected graph database. And there's certain tags in there. So you can pull out, like, we have one question about which 80s movie was talked about most on our movies last year.
Mm, nice.
And so we were able to get like movies that were made in the 80s and musicians and food ingredients and breeds of dogs and things like that. And so that was, I think, discovering that made a lot of fun questions, because then you're able to just search a lot of these databases, like Reddit is just text. It's just people typing in text. There's no structure. And so getting a structured data set and then being able to search for certain categories within Reddit, that I think created a lot of fun questions.
So the combination of data sets really made you be able to do some interesting things.
Yeah. Which was also tricky, because that creates a huge query, because you're kind of pulling like all of these movies over here, searching all of these comments over here for them, and it just like multiplies. You know, you have like millions of comments in Reddit that you're searching for, and thousands of movies you're searching for within each individual comment.
Yeah, because something important to mention is the fact that you really don't know what people are going to write as an answer.
Yeah.
So you cannot even cache the solution or anything.
Yeah.
So it's like every single time that someone answers something, you're actually processing the whole millions and millions of data.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what we wanted to do with the experience. There's some talk about doing a multiple choice versus typing in an answer. And we definitely wanted to try having users type in an answer, because then you get that feel of actually hitting BigQuery live, and you can type in whatever you want and it'll go search for it, versus multiple choice. If you have like five choices and you choose E, you're kind of thinking, well, maybe they pulled those answers, yesterday and it took 5 hours to run the query.
You can totally fake it.
Yeah, you can kind of fake it. But I think it turned out great, where people can actually tell, they type in the answer and they can type in absolutely whatever they want. It shows the SQL and the thing that you typed in is in there, and then goes and runs the query live.
I got to say, I actually got a question, which was, what was the most popular kitchen utensil during last month on Wikipedia?
Yeah.
And I went with spork.
Yeah.
My favorite kitchen utensil.
Yeah.
And the query actually worked. I got a zero.
Oh.
So yeah, yes. I don't think it was prepared before. Like, I don't think that lots of people think about sporks very often.
Apart from you, quite clearly.
I like sporks.
I don't think I've ever cooked with... I've used a spork. I don't think I've cooked with one, though.
Cool. So... I have a couple of questions about your questions. The first one is, what is your favorite question that you've written?
I think it was the comic book character one. There was a lot of, that one, there's so many of them.
Yeah.
With pulling the database, like finding a list of all comic book characters, there's like 6,000 or something. And so it's kind of fun to see random people come up and just type in some random comic book character that I've never heard of, go and look them up, and it's some side character in some Marvel comic or whatever.
That is cool.
There's one guy specifically, me and John were trying to get people to play, and hey, you want to play? He's like, no. He's like, okay. And then we go up and we play, and he sees the first question is the comic book character game, or the comic book character question. And he immediately is like, oh, no. And he runs
now
up and he's like, now I want to play. He thought it was going
to
be, maybe some kind of Trivial Pursuit type questions. And he saw the comic book one. He immediately was like, oh, Batman. I've got, he was ready to go.
Very cool. What was the hardest query to write? Like, what was the question that came with the hardest query?
No, I think it was the, I would say it's the ones that we dropped. There were a few questions that I was working really hard to get right, and it was just the data itself that wasn't quite working out. So there was a few like top musician, which I think is in there, but we kind of tweaked it. That one, I was trying to do the thing where you could type in Kanye or Kanye West, or you could type in Lennon, John Lennon. There's a few aliases for certain musicians that I wanted people to be able to type in, and it was really slow. Trying to support all the aliases, and even some of the aliases in the database were wrong. So there's many, many, many different occasions where we're trying to pull musicians or actors and someone completely unexpected comes up. So like pulling top musicians, John Cleese came up, because I think he was in a musical.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's
and
been
so
in a musical.
Oh, yeah. Technically he's a musician, and then he was the top answer for the question. He was the most talked about musician technically when we wrote this query in our music, because his alias is Friend in the database that we're using. And so whenever I saw the word Friend, it thought that they were talking about John Cleese.
Yeah,
and so he was
yeah.
like number one by far. It was like number one, John Cleese, number two, Kanye West.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
Oh, we're going to have to figure out how to do this right.
I'm sure John Cleese was very happy about that.
Yeah, I guess that, the biggest problem then was really just like, you need a data set that is clean and you have ambiguity there.
Yeah, because a lot of times we don't actually know what, we're not doing natural language processing on the Reddit comments. So it's trying to pull data out of the comments where you know what they're specifically talking about. So trying to come up with questions or write questions to where there's no ambiguity about what a user might be talking about on Reddit. Yeah. That was the really challenging part.
Very cool. Well, is there any other question that you'd like to share? Like something you're like, that was really cool and you'd like to share?
I think the speed of it. A lot of the data sets for GitHub we're doing all time. So some of the questions that got cut, just because I guess they weren't quite family friendly, was like, what programming language cusses the most?
Oh.
And that was, there's like a list of like maybe 20 different cuss words that we're searching for with GitHub. And it was, I think that was the first one I went to because it was just so fun. Everyone at the office was like really having fun with that one. And also the poop emoji one.
What was the language?
Oh, you
was
know it, what?
I want to say it's C because you know, it's so hard to write.
C was surprisingly, I think they were surprisingly happy people.
Okay, nice.
Java. I'm going to go with Java.
I think it was. Java was up there.
Very cool.
But it was the speed of it. Like it went through every single event that happened in GitHub for the past like 5 years. Like not just commits, pushes, issue comments, opening an issue, closing an issue, pull, like all of it. It went through all of it in like 10 seconds.
Wow.
That's when I first started using it. That was a big wow moment, was just the speed of that you have accessible to you. Because, you know, doing a Google search obviously is super, super fast. And that's always been impressive. But now that it's been kind of turned around and now you have the ability to use that infrastructure to search whatever you want within seconds, that moment was really, really cool.
Cool.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much to John, Violet, and Nick for those amazing interviews. We have a bunch of links in the show notes too, so you can see pictures about the demos and videos and so on. They're totally worth having a look at, so just go there and enjoy. And now we're going to go for the question of the week.
Yeah.
So the question of the week is about Deployment Manager. And as I said, it's the first time we talk about it at all.
Yep.
So I think it's probably worth mentioning a little bit what Deployment Manager is.
So Deployment Manager is a way to programmatically and declaratively basically say what infrastructure you want to spin up on Google Cloud Platform. So maybe you want a whole bunch of machines, maybe you want a Kubernetes cluster, maybe you want a Cloud SQL database. And so you can write these YAML files, send them out through Deployment Manager, and it'll create that for you in an idempotent way.
Cool. So it's kind of like Kubernetes configuration files where you describe your architecture,
kind of
architecture of your cluster, but it's a little bit, it's a higher level where you're describing the architecture of your Google Cloud Platform project in general.
Yeah.
That is very cool. There's actually, for some people that might have used it before, there's also Terraform by HashiCorp. It's kind of the same idea. Terraform works across different platforms, and Cloud Deployment Manager is just for Google Cloud Platform. So what was the question then?
So the question that got asked actually was by one of our Google Cloud Platform users, who was asking how you pass in variables to Deployment Manager.
Oh, interesting.
So if you're writing your script, you've got, say, a YAML file, but maybe you want 3 instances of something in like testing, but you want 20 instances in production. How can you do that?
How do you do it?
How do you do that? So it's actually reasonably straightforward. One of the things that Deployment Manager supports is a thing called templates. And basically, they're Jinja templates. If you've ever used Python, it's a standard templating thing for Python.
Yeah, I know those.
You know those? Yeah, wonderful. And so rather than just writing a YAML file, you write a Jinja template with these variable placeholders in them, and then you can populate them. Now, where it got a little confusing for the person in question was they figured, oh, maybe I can pass in the variables on the command line. But instead of doing that, actually what you do is you end up doing a YAML file where you import the template. And then when you import the template, you use that import as like custom resource. And then when you do that, you can pass in variables inside that YAML file. So they just become like child elements within that YAML. We'll have it in the show notes so you can see the examples. But the templates are super, super powerful because you have the full power of Jinja behind it.
Yeah.
And then you can simply just pass in whatever variables you need within that configuration. So you might have a test configuration for your testing servers, and then maybe a prod version of that as well for when you want the 20 rather than the 3 or 4 or 5.
That is pretty cool. I'm looking at some of the configuration files now. And yeah, they actually remind me a lot of kubeconfigs.
Yeah, it's if you look at the configuration files, they match up exactly with the APIs, the REST APIs that we have to be able to create stuff and delete stuff. So it's directly in line with that. They're pretty straightforward to use once you get the hang of them.
Very cool. Well, I think that's all for today. But before that, maybe it's time to, first of all, thank our listeners.
Yep.
And remind them how to contact us.
Yeah, so if they want to reach us on email, it's hello@gcppodcast.com.
If they want to reach us on our website, it's gcppodcast.com.
If they want to reach us on Twitter, it's gcppodcast.
at GCP Podcast, actually.
Sure.
if they want to reach us on Google Plus, it's plus GCP Podcast.
If they want to reach us on Reddit, it's /r/GCP Podcast.
And now I think we're done.
They want to reach us on Slack, it's #podcast channel inside the Slack community.
I always forget that one.
You do. Are you going to be anywhere special in the next couple of weeks? Any new speaking engagements coming up?
Yeah, I'm actually very excited about going to CraftConf in Budapest at the end of the month.
Very nice.
So, yeah, very, very excited about that. My first time in Hungary. Ooh. So if any of our listeners somewhere around Hungary and Budapest, let us know. I'd be very happy to say hi, and maybe I can bring you a t-shirt.
Ooh, that sounds like fun. The end of the month, I am heading to Kentucky. Here in USA.
Where bourbon comes from.
I have never been there before. So I will be going to the Vector Conference. I'm hosting a gaming roundtable there talking about how cloud changes the game. That is on the 30th of April. And then I will be heading over to Louisville on May 2nd to go to the local GDG and talk to them about Kubernetes.
Very cool. Sounds fun.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Have you ever been there?
I have never been to Kentucky. I'm kind of excited.
New state.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, thank you, Mark, for another amazing episode.
Thank you very much for joining me yet again.
And talk to you next week.
See you next week.